Mickey McGee is a sociologist and cultural critic. She's also the author of Self-Help, Inc., Makeover Culture in American Life. She thinks we're obsessed with self-improvement products these days, and with good reason.
Americans have been facing incredibly regressive economic circumstances over the past 30 years. In 1972, our parents were earning much more than what we earn now in adjusted wages. The average wage has dropped by 20% since 1972. My numbers aren't fantastical numbers. Mine come out of a very conservative estimate. I'm looking at the numbers in the economic report of the president. So these are very conservative numbers. Americans have been facing declining economic circumstances, obviously declining employment opportunities and also job stability, career stability. And in the face of those kinds of struggles, Americans need to remain not only employed, but also employable. And so they look to self-help literature and self-help culture to remain marketable.
So you think it's mostly economics that's behind this? It's not somehow that we want to be better, more effective people?
Well, people always want to be better and more effective, but I think the question is, to what ends do you want to be better and more effective? The preponderance of the books on the self-help shelves tell you how to be a better worker or how to be a better lover or how to be a better parent, but what is better? What are the values that are informing that? And what you see in the early 70s is the beginning of a kind of passion for market ideology starts to infect the self-help literature. And you'll have books like Looking Out for Number One or Winning Through Intimidation, and market values start to come into the culture. That was new for self-help literature. Self-help literature had not previously been so aggressive, survivalist, pecuniary. It wasn't like that. There's always been a conduct of life literature. But in the 70s, it changed. And in the 80s, those kinds of values became revamped as the concept of codependence, for example. Women love too much, right? The idea that you give too much in your personal life. That idea is an importation of market values into your personal life. To say that I'm going to apply a cost-benefit analysis to my personal life is to say that I'm going to use the lens of the market to evaluate every part of my life. And that's a very disturbing trend.
One of the interesting things I always thought about self-help literature, and I've seen a lot of the titles, is that they all suggest to us that we are better than we think we are. And that's a kind of an appealing idea. I mean, who is it? Anthony Robbins wrote Giant Within.
Awaken the Giant Within from Anthony Robbins, absolutely. There's an idea that there are incredible potentials within human beings. And that's a very appealing ideal and not one that I would argue with. I mean, I think that that's a given, that, you know, human beings have enormous potential. But the idea that you're going to maximize your potential by engaging in, you know, breathing exercises or getting up in the morning and doing a super fantastic to-do list, it obscures the fact that people do their best when they're supported in communities. There have been a number of clinical studies that show that self-help books have a very short-term impact, so that you might read one, feel better, engage in the activities or the exercises in a particular book for a short period of time, and have some kind of gain from it. But it's not long-lasting. And the reason it's not long-lasting, in my assessment, is that the social structures are not in place. An individual can change, but unless the world around them also changes, the tendency to move back into the original whatever it was, behavior, attitude, pattern, you're going to be stuck. It's very hard to, as an individual, on your own, to change things. It's when you work with others that you can make changes. I mean, we see this in any kind of political organizing. When you work with others and identify not your selfish individual interests, but your selfish individual interests in the context of other people's individual interests and therefore your mutual interests, that you will be effective.
Have these existed in the past? I mean, has self-help always followed this plan, or was there an earlier time when self-help meant the kind of community effort that you're talking about?
That's a great question. In the early 70s, like at the same time that you start to see this kind of market-based looking out for number one culture, you still have a different kind of self-help, the meaning of self-help being mutual assistance without the aid of professionals. So you see people like the Boston Women's Health Collective, who put out the incredibly successful book, Our Bodies, Ourselves, right? That was self-help. That was a group of women providing gynecological care to each other without the assistance of what was at the time mostly a male medical practice, right? So that's a kind of self-help culture that has incredible sort of political potential, right? That's a particular kind of self-help culture. But over the course of the last 30 years, as we've seen this rise in market ideology, we see that self-help has come to mean self-improvement. How can I fix myself up and become the best, to quote Tom Peters, the management guru, how can I be the best CEO of Me, Inc., right? How can I brand myself, right? That's the direction things have moved, where individuals are being asked to imagine themselves as corporations. And we know that corporations are designed to operate with no compass other than the compass of profit, right? So that's a very, if you've seen the film The Corporation, you probably have, you know, that's a pretty psychotic notion. It's a sociopathic notion of how an individual would operate.
Do you see any suggestion in the self-help industry that this trend from community toward individual might be reversed? Because you'd think now, especially with the loss of jobs to corporations overseas and the fact that corporations don't have quite as good a reputation anymore as they did 10 years ago, you'd think that perhaps the self-help industry would begin to shift back.
Well, it's possible. I mean, I think you see a lot of potential and a lot of very interesting things happening in, for example, it used to be the anti-globalization movement, but now it's been sort of reinvented as the sort of people's globalization movement. How can working people have a say, and how can we have a global democracy? So I think there's potential for kinds of self-help, or let's take it away from self-help and call it self-invention, that really has extravagantly rich possibilities. And that's the thing that makes me very optimistic about self-help culture, because it's not fixed, it's not reified. It is a place where various values in the culture are worked out. And we've only just seen during this period an incredible influx of market values. And we've also seen, you know, Christian fundamentalist values in self-help culture as well. So there have been a number of various values that have sort of gone through the literature in the past 30 years. But now we're seeing a whole new and fantastic generation of activists coming up who can take what we know from self-help culture, that people need to come to meetings, organizing meetings, and leave feeling good. One of the problems that, you know, organizers have is that, you know, sometimes being an organizer is discouraging, right?
Yeah.
So what can we get from self-help culture for our own activities as activists and organizers?
What do you see as the great strengths, if there are any, of the self-help culture?
The idea that we get to invent ourselves has in it a very revolutionary value, right? The idea that you're not stuck being the son or daughter of a candlestick maker. And I choose candlestick maker because Benjamin Franklin was the son of a candlestick maker, right?
Well, and this is a sort of the essential American ideal, that you can pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's the original self-help motto, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And people have for centuries come to this country with the idea, particularly, that you can invent yourself. Now, we know that social mobility for Americans right now is less than it is in France, is less than it is in Spain, is less than it is in Canada. So we know this is a complete myth, myth of social mobility at this moment, historically.
I won't argue with you about that, but I want to know why, how you so cleanly can say that it is less possible here than in those cultures. Can you give me an example of why it is less possible in America than it is in France or Canada?
Well, because all of these countries, these other industrialized countries, provide a basic social safety net that the U.S. has dismantled, has shredded over the past 20 to 30 years, right? We no longer have anything like aid to families with dependent children, right? So that's what we don't have going for us that these other countries do. They have a social safety net. They have national health insurance. They have the very, very basic things that people need to have a comfort level to be able to invent themselves. The idea that you can be out there scrapping around to just put, you know, bread and butter on your table and you're going to be able to invent yourself, well, that's lunacy. That's a fantasy. People don't do their best work when they're worrying about whether their children will be eating tomorrow.
So what do you see as the necessity in our culture? What can self-help culture do to improve the larger community?
Well, self-help culture, I mean, because it's many different things, I mean, so I don't want to say it can do one thing, but what we can take from self-help culture is the optimism that people have some measure of control over their lives. What we need to add to that is that they have a measure of control over their lives in the context of their communities, right? It's not that you invent yourself on your own, but rather you find those other persons that you can invent lives with and create a culture with and create social change with. And that's a very exciting prospect that can come out of self-help culture. It's not something that you're going to find in most of the self-help books on the bookshelf in your bookstore. This would be a kind of radical, new, reinvented self-help culture, or how would we make over culture instead of making over ourselves?
Mickey McGee is the author of Self-Help, Inc., Makeover Culture in American Life.